Yeah, the name of this class is called From Womb to Tomb, which is basically about the Jewish life cycle and different areas of Jewish life. And the most difficult aspect for me of this class is knowing what to teach and what not to teach. To be honest with you, good. So I have a pad, and if people have certain issues that they would love to talk about, I'd be happy to discuss it with them.
When you said from womb to tomb, I was sitting at supper and I said, I wonder if it's going to start before that, at conception, at fertility treatments, and
in vivo,
in vitro, what are the rules regarding,
if you're interested. It's very, very complicated. It's intricate stuff. Okay, so if you're interested, I'll talk about that. I was actually going to start before that.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Should I?
Before that? Well, I don't know. Before that, after that? Today, actually, we're going to talk about human sexuality and Judaism. Because that's an important topic. Even before you get to the womb, before you get to that, you have to, talk about sexuality and how it interplays in Judaism. Because it's something that we don't talk about, I think, enough, and it's so prevalent in our society and in life in general, especially in society in which we live. So what does Judaism have to say about sexuality, and how does it interplay? How are we supposed to relate to it? Now, obviously, this is a very sensitive topic, especially giving it in mixed company, but I think we can handle it, and we're all adults here, and we'll do it in a Sanua way, a modest way, without being explicit and overt. Okay? So, it actually begins, very interesting, in this week's Parsha. It happens to be Parsha's Bereishis. So this will sort of be a little bit of a Parsha share. There's Chumashim over there. So a little bit of a Parsha share, but also other aspects of it as well. Okay? We're going to do a little bit of jumping around.
15, he thought. You're on 16.
You're guessing 15?
No, you are. That's what you opened to before.
Oh, I was just looking. Okay, one second. 8. Sorry, nice try though. Oh, no. 8. Yeah.
No, that's what you were opening to.
Okay. Chav Zayin, chapter verse 27. This is in this week's parsha in Bereishis. Torah says, "Vayivra Elokim es ha'adam b'tzalmo." God created man in His image. "V'tzalem Elokim bara oso." Right? In God's image did God create him. Zachar u'nekeva bara'osam. God split man into male and female. Vayavarach osam Elohim. So God blessed them. Vayomer lahem Elohim. And God said to them, Peru, Ruvu, be fruitful and multiply. Umil'u es ha'aretz. And fill the world. Vikhiv shuha. Right? And subdue it. And go down into the depths of the sea. Okay. And you'll rule over the fish and the birds and every animal in the land. You're going to be in charge, you'll be in control, but Peru Rubu will be fruitful and multiply. Okay? And so obviously, if Peru Rubu is the blessing, is the principal blessing that God gives to mankind, then it only makes sense that sexuality would be inherent in the human condition. As it was. And we see that it's something very interesting, that the idea of sexuality was something that's very interesting that changes through the parsha. So skip a little bit, okay? And we'll skip to chapter 3. Here we are. Chapter 3, page 14. Okay? Listen to the language, very interesting language. V'hanachash, chapter 3, page 14. And the snake, the serpent, was haya arum mikol chayat hasadeh. It was the most naked of all the animals. Arum means naked. So what does it mean that an animal is the most naked? Anybody know of an animal that's partially clothed?
Something that got fur on them, you consider that their clothing.
So it's more naked than a hippopotamus?
No.
The serpent?
Serpent is
left. Well, the Torah says that the serpent was the most... It's interesting, you know how our article translates it. Arum is cunning, right? Well, we'll see that. What does the word arum mean in Hebrew? It means unclothed, okay? Asher asah Elohim that God made. Vayomer el ha'isha. So the snake said to the woman, God said not to eat from all the trees of the gan, of the garden. So the woman said to the serpent, now we are allowed to eat from the fruits of the garden. But God said, from one tree, from that, those two trees, God said, not only don't eat from it, don't touch it, lest you die. Why? So the serpent said, "Lo motu mutun, you're not going to die." Ki yodei Elokim, verse 5, because God knows, ki biyom achaltem mimenu v'nifkechu enechem, when you eat from it, your eyes will open. V'hayitem ke Elokim yodei tov v'ra, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now, obviously, these words are, you can spend much, much time on these words. I'm just flying through them, but there's a lot to talk about. Vatera ha'isha ki tov ha'etzel machal. So the woman saw that it was a good to eat. B'chi ta'avahu le'inayim, and it was desirous to her eyes. Right? It looked good. V'nechmad ha'etzel haskil, and it was, the more she looked at it, the better it looked. V'atikach mipir yo v'atochal. And she took from the fruit of the tree and she ate. V'atiken gam le'isha ima v'yochal. She gave to her husband also. And he also ate. Now, so they have the fruit. Right? Bad. They should not have done that. Next verse. Vati pakachna einei shnehem. The eyes of both of them opened up. Vayedu ke'erumim hem. And they realized that they were naked. Vayitperu alei te'ena vayasu lehem chagorot. And they sewed for themselves garments out of fig leaves. Right? There you go. There's the idea of the fig leaf garment. Okay? And they made belts for themselves, cloths for themselves. So, what is the obvious question? By the way, you notice, by the, how did Aristotle translate Arumim, that the snake was Arom? What was the snake before? Mm-hmm. And now what is Arom here?
Naked.
Naked. Just interesting. Yeah. I'm going to point out. Okay? What's the obvious question?
Didn't they realize beforehand they were naked?
Mm-hmm. What in the world? Something happened before they ate the fruit and after they ate the fruit that made them aware of their own sexuality. They were naked before. Everything was naked. But they didn't seem to notice. They didn't seem to care. They didn't seem to mind one way or another. But now all of a sudden, after the sin, all of a sudden they notice that they're naked. All of a sudden they notice, hey, we don't have clothes on. Let's make clothes. Whoever told them, make clothes? Somebody tell your cat, hey cat, put a sweater on? Some people have sweaters for their cats, right? But wow, who told them? Somehow they had this instinct. So by the way, what does that seem to imply about sexuality?
Something to be hidden.
Nakedness. But nakedness implies what else?
Bad, something bad.
Be shameful.
Shame.
Right. Something to be hidden means you have to cover something up, you have to hide it. Something to be covered from somewhere else. That's what it seems to imply. Moreover, clearly they did not realize their nakedness before the sin. Right? The sin is, we all know, bad. And immediately after the sin, now they realize. So what would that seem to indicate about human sexuality?
Bad.
It would seem to be, doesn't it? It seemed to be an indictment of sexuality in general. Bad, not good.
Carried forward in many characteristics today of different cultures.
Correct. But what I want to know is, what about Jewish culture?
Why bad? Why not just private? Why do you attach
bad
to it?
Well, when did they realize they're naked?
After they committed the sin.
Correct.
Okay.
That's why.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't that seem to make some connection between the
open
two?
Open their eyes. I don't know.
Okay, that's what I'm asking you.
Yeah,
does that
okay.
seem like a fair...
could open their eyes and saw things in a different way, right?
Right.
Right.
So what would have, if you do something wrong, mm-hmm. how would that open your eyes to something that's good? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a very powerful question.
You did it wrong and now you have to do it right.
Wait, nobody told them anything. They violated God's word, they ate the fruit, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden, hey, we're naked. No, they didn't realize before. They have this new awareness of their whole existence.
But they were told that that would be wrong.
They were told not to eat from the fruit. So we want to understand what happened and what does that tell us about sexuality. Okay? Anybody else have something to add? No?
If someone said anything to them, then they again wouldn't have known that anything was wrong.
Not true. What did God say to them to make them put on clothes? Nothing. So why do they put on clothes? Why do they put on clothes?
Guilt.
They weren't cold.
Guilt.
How could being guilty about eating a fruit make you realize that you should put on clothing?
Well, they all of a sudden became aware of it somehow.
Right.
Like they weren't aware of it before, and now they were very aware of it.
Good. What is
and,
it?
And ashamed of it, or...
Why is it ashamed?
Self-conscious about it.
Why are they self-conscious? They're the only two people in human existence.
I don't know. Correct. Something obviously made them feel that way.
Right. Right. That's a good question.
And yet, they were meant to be, they were a husband and wife. And husband and wife to be naked in front of each other.
Correct. And they were, and they didn't think about it. It didn't really mean anything to them. So that's what we have to investigate. And what does that teach us? And we'll see in a little bit. So the Gemara says, Tanya, says the rabbi, this is the Gemara in Yuvamos. Everybody got a sheet? Everyone should have a sheet? Oh, sorry, take one. Take a sheet, please. Take one and pass it along. Tanya, says the rabbis. This is a Gemara in Yevamos. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Kol mi she'eino osek b'piriya b'rivia." Anyone who does not engage in sexuality and procreation, ki'ilu sofech damin. It's as if he spills blood. Meaning, if you decide, listen, I don't have any children. You don't have the right to do that. You have to. A person must engage in procreation. Shneamar, as it says, Sofech dam ha'adam va'adam damo yishafech. When Noach, and next week's parsha, gets out of the teva, out of the ark, right? And when he gets out, he says, one of the rules that God gives him is he says, don't spill blood. If you kill somebody, you'll be killed. Uksi batre. And it says right after that, va'atem peruvu, and you be fruitful and multiply. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Yaakov says, ki'ilu mimma'et hadamus. It is as if you have diminished the presence of God if you don't engage in having children. Shneamar, as it says, Ki b'tzelem Elohim esa ta adam, because God was created, and man was created in God's image. Uchti batrei va'atem peru uravu. And it says it right after that, which we read, and you shall be fruitful and multiply. Ben Azai Omer, Ben Azai says, Ki ilu sofech damim. Right? It's not only as if you spill blood, it's not one or the other. It says, Benazai, if you don't have children, it's like you are reducing God's presence in the world. And it's also as if you have killed people. It's a very harsh language, because that person decides not to have children, it's as if he's murderous. Why? Because your responsibility is to create the next generation, to procreate. And if a person doesn't, then those children, that generation that you were going to bring to the world, you didn't do. So it's as if it's a very harsh language. Okay? So Amar lo ben Azai. So the rabbi said to Ben Azai, hello, yesh na'e doresh v'na'e mekayim. There are sometimes people who have nice words, they have good words, right? Good drushes, and they fulfill them. Na'e mekayim v'ena na'e doresh. So there are sometimes people that are beautiful, they do beautiful mitzvahs, but they don't have good words of Torah. They're not very articulate. They don't have good drushas. V'ata, but you, na'e doresh, v'nei na'e mekayim. Hey, you, Ben Azai, you're a very good darshan. You speak very powerfully about the need to have children. Except Ben Azai was not married. So you can imagine, Ben Azai was the single rabbi, and he got up in show, and he said, it's really important for everyone to get married. So the rabbis looked at him and said,
what about you guys?
What about you? This is what he said. Amar lehem ben Azai. So Ben Azai said to them, Uma e'ese shenafshi chashka b'Torah. What should I do? My soul is bound up in the study of Torah. Afshar le'olim nekayim ayidei acherim. The world needs children. Very good. Other people can have children. I'm learning. I don't want to waste my time with diapers and baby wipes and, you know, feedings. And I'm learning.
So what about through
a little? He says, yeah, it's important.
For somebody else.
You know, it's how many Ben Azai's are there? Really? I don't think so. So,
thank goodness there weren't too many.
So the real question is, right? The question is Ben Azai, is he articulating a value, or is Ben Azai wrong? Is he incorrect? I mean, let's say a person came to you and said, "I don't want to get married. I don't want to have children. I am so connected to God." Is that an ideal that a person is connected to God? And really, okay, and most of us, okay, basically all of us, we're not that spiritual. So therefore, since we're not so spiritual, we have to engage in being fruitful and multiplying. Or is Ben Azai wrong? He's incorrect.
So is he saying he can't be married and do the same thing and his wife? You know, like he's saying he doesn't want to change diapers and that?
No, I don't think what he's saying. He's saying...
And he doesn't have time for...
I'm busy. Yeah, I'm learning all the time. But let's be honest, Larry. You've been married a little bit.
Yeah, but obviously, when did he live? When was the...
Right, times of Gemara, Ben. Mishnah.
So,
2,000 years ago, 3,000, whatever.
Obviously, there were people that did both.
Right. But as you well know, anytime you do both, you can't do either one well.
Oh.
100% sure. A person who is... Why is Tiger Woods so good at golf?
He's married.
That's good. And what happened when he got married?
He got worse.
He got worse for 5 years.
He got worse for a while. He was a little distracted.
There you go.
And then he learned to live with it.
On the other hand, all the guys in the
cola
are married.
Right. Well, that's another issue. We're not going to get into that.
I'm just saying, they're learning and married.
Ah.
And making many children.
Making many children. So where is Ben Azai coming from? Is it, in the abstract, could you not see that if a person was singularly focused on whatever, physics, that marriage would be a distraction?
Yeah.
No? You can't see that?
Sorry.
Really? I mean, for most people, they feel a need to be married. They feel a need to be connected to somebody else. They feel like there's something missing with them. And now they didn't feel like, I got God.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of people who think that they're married to their work.
Right.
I mean, and obviously maybe if you're married to your work and you have a family, sometimes it takes away from your family.
What do you mean sometimes?
Well, but I'm saying that there are...
What do you mean sometimes? You can't do it all. You just can't. There's no way. If you're going to be a father and a good father, you can't learn 14 hours a day.
But I don't think that was his point, wasn't it?
Look what he says. He says, what should I do? Maya said, Nafshi Choshka Batorah.
Right, but I don't, was his point, I can't do either one well, so I'm just going to do one?
Or
was it,
my soul is bound
this
up.
This is all I know from.
I don't think so. I don't think he was just unattractive guy, you know what I mean? I mean, the Midrash is talking about Ben Azai, that he met Rabbi Akiva's daughter, and she said he wasn't Purim, and she said, if you become Purim, I'll marry you. And so he became a Bar Tshuva, but he loved it so much, it's not clear that he ever got married.
Mm.
He became a Bar Tshuva, and he said, he stayed in the yeshiva. She probably, let's go. No, I'm busy.
There are several religions and cultures, particularly Catholics, feel that if you are going to be most religious, then you cannot marry.
Right. Correct. Excellent. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to discuss why is that? What is the nature, or what is their inherent view of sexuality? Okay, so is Ben Azai's value a good value? Now that you bring that up, I will mention that.
Like a priest.
Lahavdil, right? So what is Lahavdil? What is the Christian view of sexuality?
It's
original sin.
Correct. Sexuality, what is the original sin?
The eating of the apple and knowing that, they...
I've heard, I shouldn't say it on a tape them up, that'll be spread around the internet, but I've heard that according to some theologians that the original sin was that Eve slept with the serpent. You never heard such a thing? Nobody ever
no.
heard such a thing?
No.
Anyone?
No. Don't even want to.
You must have different internet.
Yeah, no, I'm not on that internet. I mean, but,
I guess you're as excited as you do.
So I heard. So why? Because otherwise, why would sexuality be so negative in the Catholic religion? So nowadays, it's interesting. They think about it from the religion, right? Jesus, Lahavdil, God, how was he born?
Virginal.
Right. Birth without sexuality. Reproduction without sexuality. That is the holiest form. And that every child being born is a concession. Right, that's why, you know, if you had to choose the life of the mother or the life of the child, you would always sacrifice in Catholicism the life of the mother, because the child never hasn't sinned yet. Whereas the parents, by definition, have sinned. I'll give you another example.
No, that's so easy.
Yeah, yeah, the child has not sinned yet, it's unborn.
The child hasn't been baptized, it is still... That's what baptism does. It absolves them of original sin.
All right, we'll have to have this machlokes later. But they talk now about, why can't you have married priests? Because the Catholic Church is in big trouble. Why? Because there's a problem with being celibate. I was just reading yesterday, somebody was in a Quaker village, maybe David Crum in the paper. The Quakers, they had this shita, that sexuality was terrible. So they divided into two camps. The men and the women. And what do you know? What happened to the Quakers?
They
died out.
It's not the Quakers, it's the Shakers.
The Shakers. Thank you.
Okay, I was wondering.
Yeah, it was the Shakers, and they died out. Why? Because...
No children.
Doesn't work that way. Right, it just doesn't work. No children.
They
work
real bright.
What?
They work real bright.
I wonder why they were called Shakers. I don't really know.
When they davened, they shook. From the excess of
sub. We should call ourselves Shakers too, right? Yeah, there you go. So, and if you think about it, they talk about this idea of, why can't priests marry? They have to marry, because if they don't have children, you're never going to have any more priests. But the answer is, it's a spiri minei bei in Catholicism. If you understand what the whole idea of a priest is, the most holy person. And in their mind, the most holy person is one who absolves himself from sexuality, denies himself the physical pleasures of the world. And for that reason, right, so you can never have such a thing because it's against their religion. So, but is Ben Azai, I mean, we see this value in the Gemara. My soul is bound up in Torah. Is that a value or is it not a value? So if we look at the next story, look at the Rambam, Hilchos Ishus, Laws of Marriage, very interesting. And the Rambam says, let's skip to Bet. See where it says Bet? Okay. Haish, yes. Haish mitzvah al piriya v'rivya avala haisha. Right, a man is obligated in this mitzvah peru urvu, being fruitful and multiplying, and not the woman. Right, we discussed this extensively during the summertime. That is the mitzvah on the male. Now, it's not a commandment on a female, and we discussed a number of possible reasons why it is not a mitzvah on the female. Umei matai haish nikhayev mitzvah zu. When is a man obligated to fulfill this commandment? Ben Shiva Esrei, 17 years old. Okay, at 17, as I said, the Rambam, 17 should be married. Okay, you're rolling your eyes, but
I know. But when you died at the age of 32 or 35, you've got to get.
If our children would marry in their parents' households and grow up that way, it would solve a lot of problems. But they wouldn't.
They're getting closer to it every day.
Okay. V'keivan she'avru esrim shana v'lo nasa isha. If you're 20, you're old, and you didn't marry, harei ze'over u'muvatel mitzvahs aseh. You have negated a positive commandment. Well, it's like you have to put on tefillin every day. You have to have children. And if you're 20 and you didn't do that commandment, you're wasting time. You're losing a mitzvah. V'imaya oseik b'torah. But if you are studying Torah, v'tarudba, and you're busy, so let's say you're in yeshiva. You say, well, if I get married, I'm learning good. But if I get married, then I'm going to have to go out and get a job and support my wife and you know, work, and I'm not going to learn. You can push it off. Why? Because if you're engaged in one mitzvah, then you're exempt from another mitzvah. And that certainly holds true of study of Torah. Says that Gimel continues. But, mi shechashka nafsho betorah tamid. If a person, his soul is bound up in Torah always, vishagaba kiben azai, and he is consumed with it, like ben azai, v'nidbakba kol yamav, and he is He is clinging to Torah all his days. Velo nasa isha, and he did not marry. Ein biyado avon. That is not a sinful behavior. Vehu shelo yihya yitzro mitgaber ala. But that's only, by the way, if you can control your inclination. You know, you cannot get married and then say, well, you know, a man's got to be a man. It doesn't work that way. Right? You know, if you're bound up in Torah, if your soul is bound up in God, then you have that kind of self-control. But if you are not able to control your yetzer, your desires, chayav lisa isha, okay, then you have to get married, etc., etc. So what does the Rambam seem to say? Maimonides seems to say,
it's okay.
Okay.
Well, it's anything desirable.
Yes. It seems that way. That there's this idea
to learn Torah and not get married.
Right. If a person feels that he can be bound up with God. And that's really an idea. That's what he says, ein biyado avon. That's not a sinful behavior. So if you look at there's a little, I don't know if you can read this, in the bottom it says, Hagos Maimonios, the opinion of the Hagos Maimonios. There's a gloss. And he writes, he just quotes the Rush, Kasav HaRush, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel. When he saw this Rambam, Menachet Asher ben Yechiel, the Rambam, we're going to see where he came from. Hadar Minan, that which he said, Ve'im Iyef Shalilmo Yilmod Ba'achar Kachisa Isha. Right, kavta la'oso limud. Right, so then he should learn and not get married. Lo yadana, I don't understand it. Doesn't make sense. Shelo yitachen shibatel mipuria v'rivya kol yamav. It doesn't make any sense that a person should not engage in having children his whole life. Shelo matinu ze ella beben azai. That we only saw that it was only a one shot deal. It was only one guy like that, ben azai. But you don't make rules like that for individuals. And Ben Azai, you know, and by the way, the Gemara does not tell us what the rabbi's response to Ben Azai was. It seems that the rabbis were, if you look at from the text that we learned, haven't seen the rabbi's response to Ben Azai was like, what did they feel it was like? Happy or not happy?
Not happy.
And his response was, you can't make me get married. They couldn't make him get married. But they were, you know, you hypocrites. You know, and Ben Azai himself was the one to get up and said, you have to get married, you have to have children, it's so important. It's like a person is murdering. Oh, what about me? What can I do? You know, it seems like a concession. So the Rush comes along and says, hey, Rambam, I wouldn't call this an ideal because it's not an ideal. But it seems very interesting. We have a huge argument between the Rambam and pretty much everybody else. It's the Rambam and many of the other sources. So if you'll turn to page 2, okay? Okay, this is says the Ramban, Nachmanides, wrote a letter called Igeret HaKodesh. It's a very well-known letter. And it was all about human sexuality. Because I think especially, if you think about what was the prevailing mode of thought during the Ramban's time. Ramban lived in Spain in the 1400s. So what was the prevailing mode of thought at the time in Spain in the 1400s? Remember, if I would ask you today, what is the prevailing mode of thought in American society today? What would you say?
Anything goes.
Anything goes. Right? There is no prevailing mode of thought in American society today. People don't live based on, there's no age of enlightenment, there's no age of anything, it's age of
anything.
Self-gratification. Mm-hmm. That is the age in which we live. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no, people don't live based on higher ideals or, you know, greater causes or ethics or morals or, they don't really do anything. They just do whatever they want. But in the Ramban's time, what was the prevalent mode of thought? What was the most forceful? What?
Catholicism.
Spain. Great Christian Spain. Right? So it's so interesting. Just think about it this way. Who's writing the newspapers? Lahabdiya. Right? Who's controlling the media? Who's setting the tone for society?
It's all the church.
The church. Correct. So we, just like today, so the values that we're fighting today are the values of anything goes. And those values are prevalent everywhere. And so you come to shul and it's like, you know, you gotta get away from there. So too, Judaism, its time, it was fighting the values of Christianity. Now people, of course they weren't going to convert, but how do you fight against a society where the whole society looks up to the priest? looks up to the nun as being this spiritual holy person. You have to think about it in those terms. So Ramban had to wrote a whole essay on this topic, because it was a very powerful issue in his time, this idea of the negativity about human sexuality. Okay, so he says, da. No, it should be noted. You have Hebrew and the English. I should probably read, I'll read it in English, in case I have both. Should be noted that marital intercourse can occur in one of two ways. The first way is proper, and let no one think that there is anything unseemly or disreputable about it. I mean, there are two ways for a person to engage in sexuality. Permitted and not permitted. Permitted is, can be beautiful and wonderful and holy, and not permitted is not. And those are the two ways. Indeed, such intercourse is called knowledge, as in Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife. What is it? The word in Hebrew for marital relations is Yodea. It says, what does it say? You know, as soon as Adam got married, Vayeda Adam es Chava Isha. Where is it? Let me see. It's probably here somewhere. Yeah. After the sin, blah, blah, blah. The Adam Yada et Chava Ishto. Yada, what is Yadat? To know. How can you say that's a bad thing? And it's knowledge in the biblical sense. That's what it means. Yes.
Does this imply that they did not have marital relationships before they ate the fruit?
Sounds like. Well, no. It says v'adam yada. So Rashi says on there, if I recall, yada means kvar kodam ha'inyan, before, even before in Gan Eden that they did. Correct. Excellent question. Okay. When the seed is drawn forth in holiness and purity, it comes from the source of knowledge and understanding, which is the brain. Were it not for the sacred dimension of this act, it would not have been called knowledge. Rambam was wrong in his Mora HaNebuchim. Rambam wrote a book called The Guide for the Perplexed, when he praised Aristotle for defining the sense of touch as shameful to us. Remember, what is Aristotle, the Greeks? Philosophers, ideals. So the idea of philosophy was to remove yourself from human pursuits. Right? Plato, what is Plato? What is a platonic relationship? It's not a man and a woman being just friends. A platonic relationship is where people have a connection in the world of ideas.
Specifically excluding sexual knowledge.
Correct. Excluding sexual knowledge. So now we use that in the context of men and women being friends. But platonic relationship really means that man, that you can, I enjoy this person's company for the interaction that we have on an intellectual level. And that's what the Greeks valued. So he says, heaven forbid, the Greek's statement was untrue, containing a veiled trace of unbelief, of kfira. Had the Greek Acher believed that the world was created as an act of divine will, he would not have spoken in this way. He says, if he believed that God created the world, which he didn't believe, then sexuality would be good, because that's the way God created the world. We, however, who possess the Holy Torah, believe that God created everything as his wisdom decreed, and that nothing he created was shameful or unseemly. If we say intercourse is shameful, then the reproductive organs are shameful too. Yet, God made them and established them. And he did not create anything with a blemish or shortcoming. Otherwise, his actions would be less than perfect. Whereas the greatest of prophets, Moshe, declared, the rock whose work is perfect, Tzur Samim Pa'alo. Meaning, God created the world. Either God knew what he was doing or he didn't know what he was doing. If he knew what he was doing, he made this part of the human condition. And if you made it part of the human condition, then it has to be good. You cannot say that it's bad, because if it was bad, then you would say that God made something wrong. God made something bad. Rather, you have to say there's some goodness to it. Indeed, God, in whose pure outlook evil has no room, corruption and shame are likewise absent. He created man and woman, and he created all their limbs and prepared them to suit their function. This is clearly evident in Genesis 2:25, thus, both were naked, Adam and his wife, they were not ashamed. So now we go back to our original question. How could it be that they were embarrassed? They were not embarrassed before, and they're embarrassed afterwards. All of this happened before they sinned, when they were preoccupied with spiritual matters, and all their intentions were pure. They viewed their reproductive organs as not different from their eyes, hands, or any other limb. Right? Meaning, you know, pick up a cup, you don't think, oh, I got to cover my hands. It's a terrible thing. When, however, they turned to the physical pleasures without pure intent,
they knew that they were naked. Just as hands writing a Torah scroll are honorable, exalted, and praiseworthy, and hands doing a despicable act are shameful, so were Adam and Eve's reproductive organs before and after they sinned. So, somebody explain to me what happened from before they sinned and what happened after they sinned. Anyone? Why did they know that they were naked after they sinned?
Because they were focused on it. Where they weren't, where before they were in a spiritual
state. Right.
And they didn't see it. It didn't matter.
With the sin, they learned that they could use their own bodies for negative, for self-gratification as opposed to for spiritual reasons. Now, is this cup of coffee good or bad?
Right now, it's not so good to be cold.
Right. Is it good or bad?
It depends on its condition and how it relates to you.
Correct. It depends on why I'm drinking it.
So that
would be Yetzer Hara's
creation?
Well, so you guys are really interesting questions. Could the Yetzer Hara been, how could it be created? Meaning, if there was no Yetzer Hara before, then how could they have even had the inclination to eat the fruit? But if they didn't have, this is one of those fun paradoxes that I like talking about. But if they had a Yetzer Hara, then how could they not have been aware? So perhaps the Yetzer Hara was revealed to them in some way. I'm not aware of a good way of articulating the answer to this question. It's a very good question. But they somehow, through experience, they were able to uncover the idea that I can either drink a cup of coffee because I need, because I need refreshment, I need sustenance. Or actually, coffee is not a very good example. Right? Coffee is a very bad example.
You need to wake up.
Right?
You need to stay up a few more hours.
So I can learn. Right? I can give the class.
Yeah.
Right. Very good. Okay. Or why do I drink it? Because I like it, for my own self gratification. So now there's somewhere in between where God created the pleasure as well. And the pleasure is there to help me sustain myself. But at some point, we all know, and most of us have been there at some point, the self-gratification becomes the primary force for my eating. And then the eating becomes destructive. Then it becomes hurtful. Then it becomes negative. I'm not sustaining myself. I'm destroying myself. So that's what happened with the apple. If you look at how the Torah describes what Chava did. Why did she take the apple? I'll take it back. It's not an apple. Why did she take the fruit? It says, she looked at it. I'm on page 14 at the bottom. Vav, 14 at the bottom. Vatere ha'isha, the woman saw, ki tov ha'et l'ma'achal. Good for eating. V'chitavahu le'einayim. It's a desire for the eyes. V'nechmad ha'etz l'haskil. And the tree was, I don't like how they translate it. I really have no idea. Desirable is a means to wisdom. Haskil means she, it was good to think about, meaning she was preoccupied. And anyone who's ever sinned, which is all of us know, that when you want something, you're thinking about it and thinking about it, you become preoccupied, and you think that this is going to be the solution to all your problems. It's going to make you feel better. It's going to resolve all your issues.
Could it be
like a new pair of shoes?
Could be, yeah, like a new pair of shoes. Right. The shoes are not going to make your feet feel better, almost guaranteed. Okay, it's a good example. Any example. And then she took the fruit and she ate it. So now she realized that the world that was there to sustain her and to allow her to become close to God had a negative aspect as well. And the negative aspect was it could be used for self-indulgence, for personal pleasure. And then if they realized that about a fruit, sexuality has the power to be taken in to some, to the nth degree. And all of a sudden they realized that they were naked. That what they before saw simply as a means to an end, right, this is what we need in order to reproduce. They had engaged in sexual activity. And they didn't think of it. But now they saw, I can use this for personal pleasure. That's something to be hidden. There's a sense of shame in that. Thus, all God's works are just, pure, and clean. Whereas that which is objectionable stems from human action. Thus King Solomon said, God made men upright, but they have sought out many inventions. Accordingly, as created, there is nothing corrupt or indecent about any of the human limbs. All were created perfectly as required with supreme wisdom. Man, however, being a sinner, renders unworthy that which has been unobjectionable to begin with. The mystical terms, the knowledge I refer to when man, whose symbol is wisdom, and woman, whose symbol is understanding, unite in purity. Thus, union in marriage is an exalted act when performed in the proper context. Indeed, legitimate marital union reenacts the mystery of the creation of the earth, heaven and earth. Thus, the saying of the Lord, who stretched forth the heavens and laid the foundation of the earth and formed the spirit of man with him. And he goes on about the mystical understanding of what man represents and what woman represents, and how the combination of the two is a recreation of creation, as it were. But what you see from here, Ramban says, God forbid that a person should say that sexuality is a negative. If God created the world, he created us with inclinations, he created us with the ability to procreate, and that's a holy thing. And so how do you know if it's right or not? How do you know if it's good or not? How does a person know? How are you supposed to know if it's proper or not? There's only one way to know. In the Torah, if you engage in this behavior in the way that God instructed you to, then it has the power to be not good.
The right one?
The most holy thing you could do. Almost as if you're recreating the world. You're engaging in an act of creation. It's the most creative thing a human being can do. Whereas, on the other hand, if you don't do it the way God use it the way God prescribed you to use it, that same power to exalt and to sanctify, that's on that same level that we have the power to degrade and desecrate. And that's the danger. You know, you can take it, goes both ways. Right? It can be the most holy thing and it can be the most degrading thing. And unfortunately, what we find is, all too often in our society, we only know one thing. Because it's so strong and so powerful and it's so pervasive. So what happened to human beings? So now let's just go back to the Chumash and we'll see what happened to mankind when mankind tried to engage after they got kicked out of Gan Eden. What happened to sexuality? It's just very interesting. It says, turn to, one second, we know Cain and Hevel, they had children. 22, page 22, please. Okay, so there was a guy named Lemech, okay? Lemech was, Pasuk 18, verse 18. Chanoch et Irad. Chanoch et Irad. Irad yalad et Mechuyael. Irad had Mechuyael. Mechuyael yalad et Metushael. And Metushael yalad et Lemech. Right? Mechuyael, fine, Lemech. Yud Tet. Vayikach lo Lemech shtei nashim. Lemech took two wives, Shem Ha'achat Ada, the Shem Ha'achat Tzila. Okay, so he took two wives, one was Ada, and one was Tzila. So look at Rashi, Ada and Tzila, an unbelievable Rashi. Shtei Nashim. Okay, says Rashi, halfway down, Shtei Nashim, first column, see it? Kach Hayah Darkan Shel Dor HaMabul. They all had two wives. Why do you have two wives? Get this. Achat lepiriyah v'riviyah, one for children, v'achat letashmish, okay, and one for fun. Zusihi letashmish, so the one that he wanted to have fun with, mashkeh kol shel ikarin kedei shetei aker, right? So what he would do? He would give her some kind of poison so that she would become sterile, not have children, and then umikoshetet kakala. Okay, and you know, he would dress her up, make sure she was all dolled up and good looking. Umachila ma'adanim. And he would feed her, and you know, he would treat her well. He would take her out on the town. The chaverta, and her friend was nuzufa ka'almana. She was, you know, stuck on the side. You know, she would be the childbearing wife. Okay, so one, he had two women. One wife was for fun, and one wife was for having children. Right? And the two so never mixed. So what does it tell you about their society? What their society? Okay, we know how to have children. But reproduction is a necessary evil, and I've got one wife for that. But sexuality, that's about me. That's about self-gratification. All right, I got another wife for that. And that's her purpose. And the two shall not mix. And so what happened? Says Rashi, that was Darkon Shodor Hamabu. Right, this was the practice in the generation of the flood. Right? God did not like that. And a person says, yeah, you know, I've got my wife, the mother of my children, but then I got my girlfriend on the side. Right? Because, you know, come on. Right? Mankind was given the gift of sexuality, according to the Torah. And so it's really up to us. Do we combine the sexuality and this idea of reproduction and sexuality and make it something holy? Or do we distinguish between the two? And on the one hand, speak about reproductiveness as a necessary evil and enjoy the self-gratification on a different level. Yeah.
When did that change? Because obviously later people had two wives and they had children from both.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
right. You know when it changed? When God wiped out the generation of the flood. It's very easy to change society when you kill them all.
Both wives bore children. It says,
where are you?
She bore. So both of them.
Where are you?
Both
of wives. Yelled at you. Right. Right. Good point. One second. Maybe it didn't work. I guess the poison didn't work. You're right. He had both children. But that's what the Midrash says. That he was the firmest of them. Maybe that's why he had children from each of them. But the Minagwaz, everybody had two wives. So nowadays, we don't have two wives. Right? But do we not? No, I don't. That's not what I mean.
No.
You know? Yeah. But that's because the society in which we live tells us, and there really is this prevalent value, that there isn't a sense of holiness about sexuality in our society. It's anything goes. Now, I was talking with somebody this morning. I was talking about I Love Lucy, actually, is what we were talking about. And I like watching I Love Lucy because it's genuinely, you look back, it was genuinely funny. It's timeless. And you think the writers back then, they had to be funny in order to make you laugh. And nowadays, I don't watch much of it, but everything is based on some kind of sexual innuendo. And they don't have to work as much anymore because you can always pull a laugh out of some kind of sexual joke. And it's amazing to see where our society has gone from in terms of appropriateness in 50 years. You could just chart it as easy as pie. And it affects us. It's very, very difficult not to be affected by that. And to try to maintain a level of sanctity, being bombarded with just billboards on the road all the time. And I think that even before we talk about the Jewish life cycle, to understand the values that are being shot at us at every turn, and to be aware of them, I think, is an important thing. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, one short.